Welcome to the APCDA podcast. I'm Ruchira Tripathi, and with me is Felicity Brown. And together we talk about career journeys with our guests. We are speaking to Dmitry Mikhailov today. Dmitry wears many hats. He's a professor, scientist, business innovator, and an author, and he's based out of Dubai. Dmitry, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Great meeting you.
So as we kick off the episode, could you share a little bit about your background?
I'm PhD in big data and artificial intelligence. I'm a professor, but I'm happy to work not on this academic. I also focus a lot on actually giving universities abilities to have spin-offs, so-called companies, business innovation companies that can bring to the market what was designed in the university. And artificial intelligence plays a vital role now in this area, helping business to have advantages of the big data available and of academicians who can and know what to do with this data.
Okay, so what you're saying is that you are essentially a professor, but who also works with companies?
Yes, because universities now, they do a lot of research. I've been doing it in Singapore, where I lived for 8 years. I'm doing it now in Dubai, in Abu Dhabi. Universities do a lot of research. And one of the things that society pushes the university to do is to have innovations that are ready for the market, that can step to the market and can create job places and speed up economy within new things developed. So universities are pushed to make spin-offs. And that is the case for many big universities.
Like the incubator centers. I know that NUS has an incubator center in Singapore.
Right.
But is
yes.
that what you're talking about? Like the small startups
right.
in areas of focus?
Right. In Singapore, I worked actually in the NUS Enterprise. It's a division of the university that is in charge for bringing innovations to the market.
Okay. Great. So if we talk about your areas of focus, I know that you mentioned artificial intelligence, but AI is a very broad field. So could you tell us a little bit about what are the fields that you work on, or what are the kind of problems that you are solving through your research and through the companies that you're working with?
Yes, you know, artificial intelligence changed a lot within recent years. We all noticed this ChatGPT and other great models. Most of the models went open source. And actually, if you look at the landscape of artificial intelligence nowadays, it became data-centric. Data-centric means that now scientists work more on the quality of data, and they work more on labeling this data. By labeling, I mean you have to explain the computer what you see in the picture, if I say it with my own words. And this data-centric pivot is super important now, because as a scientist you can download plenty of models and you don't spend so much time on them anymore, but getting data is essential nowadays. And that makes the area very interesting, because now scientists have to look at different various verticals and try to find where they can have access to plenty of data that can be used for the models, and then can be used to transform the whole vertical. And that is super exciting, because now you have to have a very broad horizon of your knowledge to become really successful in artificial intelligence. So it changed a lot. Even the profession of artificial intelligence specialist has changed a lot.
So is there a particular problem that you're trying to solve? Because I also understand that there is a field within this space which is called deep tech, where, you know, a lot of organizations, they're trying to focus on it, and they're trying to use the technologies that are currently available to solve global issues that nobody is tackling. Sorry, so it's not like the tech is not available, but it's just that nobody's focusing on it. So are there some kind of problems that you're interested in the space of AI that you're working on?
Absolutely. And there are a lot of examples. Why deep tech is important in the area of data-centric AI is because with deep tech, you apply a lot of physics to extract better data and process this data. I'll give you some practical examples. If you, for example, I work in the area of agriculture for a long time, and in agriculture you can get a lot of information about, say, the fields or the farmers from a satellite. And if you do it in a visual spectrum, how we see the pictures, you cannot diversify really different crops on the ground. But if you start looking at the same crops in the infrared, and if you start to diversify these crops in the infrared, adding some indexes and some mathematics, you can see that certain reflections of an infrared from, say, maize or wheat is so different. And for this, to get this enriched data, you have to know physics quite well, and you have to understand that infrared reflection of different crops is different. That is vital for solving this problem, and it really has very little to do with artificial intelligence. It's more about physics, and if you do the physics right, artificial intelligence model become very simple. Those who don't know physics will work with visuals of the crops, and the model will be so hard to be trained, and you have so how to have so much data, additional data that's doesn't make sense. That's a very good example on how deep tech and data-centric AI is transforming the industry now.
Right. So, Dimitri, going back to many, many years ago when you were a child, I want to find out a little bit about you as a young person. I mean, what were your growing up years like? What kind of interests did you have? Because you've chosen a field which is up and coming. I mean, everybody is excited about the AI space, the deep tech space, but tell us a little bit about you as a young person so that we can see some connections.
I grew in Central Asia, and in Central Asia, when you go to schools, basically ex-Soviet schools, you have diversity of different verticals like chemistry, physics, biology, and everything is quite intense. So I think that helped with the foundation of me being involved in multiple areas. And second, Central Asia is very diverse culturally. I mean, historically, in the classes, you have Germans, Ukrainians, Russians, Caucasians, Chinese, Koreans. Everybody's it's a big mix. It's a melting pot of nations. That's why I feel so comfortable afterwards living in Singapore for 8 years. And this diversity in cultures also brings you very unique skills of, assessing the problem from different angles. And I think this all helped a lot in forming me as a specialist in artificial intelligence, especially with these diverse applications of artificial intelligence. If you look at any scientist in AI, he's not focused on one problem. He's always focused on the niche where you have a lot of data. And that makes your life amazing. I mean, it's so interesting. One day I'm in, say, next week I'm going to Pakistan for agricultural project. Last week I've been in Europe in another agricultural project, and that's only agriculture. And then you can have other areas like medical areas that I'm doing in the Emirates, and the same project is ongoing in South Korea. So just imagine the geography and the diversity that you face. But at the end of the day, you work with the data and you apply same tools, but your life is super interesting.
But I mean, a couple of questions there, then I'll get back to the growing up piece. I mean, these problems for me as a layperson, they are like completely different problems. Like, I mean, you have a problem in agriculture and then you're working with the hospitals in the medical space. Where are your skill sets? How are you able to align your skill sets to work on issues that both of these areas have? Where's
Well,
the
first of
commonality
all,
essentially?
there are several, and it can sound a little bit different to what most specialists say now on the market. But first of all, you have to have very good soft skills, because the first thing that you do when you tackle some AI problem is to speak with experts, and these experts are very diverse. They have different cultures from different parts of the world, and you have to understand. We call them whisperers in slang, because basically, they know. I'll give you an example. You come to a doctor, very professional doctor, and he immediately look at your face and says, "Oh, you have problems with kidneys. well, you have that problem, or and like sometimes these doctors cannot explain how they understand it about you. And when you ask them, they say, "Oh, I just see these people every day, and I don't know how, I just guess." And they're always right, but it's not guessing. It's your subconsciousness. It's how your brain works. It means that you can spot as a professional certain aspects that maybe even sometimes you cannot spell or you cannot understand. And working with experts is super important. Sorry, same with agriculture. A lot of agricultural experts who actually know everything about their crops, and sometimes they cannot even formulate the criteria why they understand that certain crop has disease or certain crop will not survive. So this soft skills of speaking with experts is extremely important. And basically they are diverse, and in different areas you apply the same skills. The second thing that you do after speaking with an expert, you start collecting the data and you start labeling the data, and you use the same tools almost for any area. I'll give you an example. In Dubai, we work with Dubai Health Authority with asthma, with asthmatic people. We collect coughs of asthmatic people, and we had to develop an app, give it to the people, to the patients, so that they cough in the app whenever they have asthma strike, and we analyze the sound. And say in Kyrgyzstan, we work with different crops, and we give also an app to a specialist to make pictures of the crops when they have certain disease. And this is the United Nations sponsored program. They're very different, but in both cases, I had to speak with experts, doctors or agronomists. Then I had to give them an app to collect data. And now I'm getting this data in two different projects, right? But I'm getting this data to two different databases. And then I'll have to formulate the problem. And then I'll have to work with the model. And what's interesting with the model of AI to have diagnostics or to differentiate the crops. But at the end of the day, the AI part is about maybe 20% of my time. 80% of my time is about speaking with experts and designing how to collect the data. And the better is the data, the better is the result of the model.
It's very interesting. I mean, when you were telling this, I don't know if you've seen this movie, Felicity. Have you seen Sully, about the plane where they landed on the Hudson River, the pilot, and he
Yeah.
has to go through the investigation? And basically, it's exactly that. I mean, he had to take like a split second decision to decide if he had enough fuel to kind of reach the airport, or he had to land on the river. And he decided to land there because he figured that he can't reach there. And then when they ran the models again and again, they realized that he couldn't really reach there. So, I mean, it's interesting that you are, kind of trying to convert that knowledge into an AI model that can be then, excuse me, it can be then, used by the non-experts. Essentially, that's what you're trying to do, right? So
Right,
bring that
absolutely.
expertise in. Very interesting. So let me kind of, come back to the childhood piece, because there was one more question I wanted to ask before I move on. So you were talking about, your growing up years where you grew up amidst cultural diversity. You had a very solid sciences education, science-based education. But if you think about activities that you did, or maybe people that you kind of looked up to or admired growing up, that kind of fueled this passion into the science area. I mean, how did that happen? Was it coming from, sometimes it comes from the family, sometimes it comes from, external influences. So what was that for you?
Oh, my father was very passionate about science, and we always were going through these different scientific books. And at that time, it was hard to get, we had no internet, obviously, and it was hard to get access to very good books. So we had to make a lot of experiments. I distinctly remember it just on the table with some physics, chemistry, from what we could find in the shops or in the street. And my father always spent a lot of time on having these physical and chemical experiments, or even biology experiments. We were trying to grow some crops, and it influenced me a lot, this practical stuff with my dad.
So was he a scientist as well, or was he
No,
just interested in science?
he was very interested, and at that time, as we had no YouTube or any other channels, he entertained me with how amazing nature around us is and what you can do with all these things without even having money or access to internet or access to good books.
Right. You know, one of the things I find so interesting about your background, Dimitri, is that you have basically kind of moved from one specialization to the other. I mean, if you stand here and look back, and now that you're in the AI field, it all makes sense because, I mean, the AI specialists, they have to have fingers in so many areas. But the things that you studied, like for example, I think you've done degrees in economics and in computer science and business. People, you know, normally would specialize in just one area. And in that particular area, maybe they would kind of get into it a little bit deeper. So could you kind of tell us about this academic journey? Like, how did you? Because I'm not even sure if at that point you were really thinking about getting into AI. Maybe you were navigating your academic journey with something else in mind. So, could you share with us a little bit about what that was? How did you decide to kind of do some of these programs?
By that time, of course, there was no artificial intelligence when I was getting my education, but I was focused in computer science, and computer science was all about processing the data, and it was always, and not only the data, it was also about sensors and fusion of different sensors. So at the end of the day, it's almost the same. You have to look in different domains, and you have to work with different sensors. You have to collect data from different sensors and then process them on the computer. Computers were not powerful enough, and so you could not perform the models that you have now, and you couldn't store the data that you have now. But at the end of the day, being a computer scientist is quite the same. It's about processing tons of information in various fields and domains, and it's super exciting. But computer science is basically just a tool for a business. And I was always interested on how to bring this fabulous research that you can see in different universities to business. That's how I got my MBA in Warwick University in the UK. And I was very, very happy about it because nowadays, you remember, like Steve Jobs told that doing innovations and that technical area is not enough. You have to also bring some business innovation, and you have to fuse this all to really bring to the market what you developed. And most scientists, they don't think about it, and that's what really bothered me. I really wanted to make this research useful to the society and bring these innovations to people.
Right.
I'm interested now, Dimitri. Tell us about your first job.
My first job, actually, it's interesting. I was in the university, and these websites, web shops, something that you could, there was no Amazon, and you could start sell something online. And being a university student, I started to sell some equipment for laboratories because I saw there was a lack of such equipment. And that helped me a lot to have this first business skills. It was not related to computer science, but at that time it was important to understand how to market and how to sell this thing, how to sell anything. And that helped me a lot. I don't want to do the sales anymore in my life. It was a shocking experience, but at least I understand how to market products and what market really needs.
So
So that
this was
was
after
your
master's,
own
is it?
business. After the masters. Yeah, and your own business. Okay, what did you do sort of after you did that then? How long were you doing the selling for, and then how did your
No,
career progress after that?
just maybe 6 months, and after I was involved in after finishing university, was involved into one of the biggest experiments in the world at CERN in Switzerland. And I lived in Switzerland for a while, and it helped me a lot of physics for doing this huge experiment with trying to find Higgs boson. And that was exciting. That's how I got into the world of the big scientific experiments. I'm still part of this. And you have about maybe 200-300 top scientists working together on a giant project. And that helped a lot of my in my career as well. And then I moved to Singapore, and National University of Singapore is one of the biggest universities in the world. And I think it's top 10 and definitely one of the first in Asia. And that was a huge experience. Singapore University is like a city, a small city. And working there was exciting. And I worked under Freddie Bowie, who was a vice president and the head of Singapore Enterprise, the division that was in charge for commercialization of the science. And I was always between this commercial arm and the scientific arm, speaking with domain experts in different areas, like geologists, biologists, chemistry guys, and building models, collecting data, building models for them, because AI happened to be the best way and very straightforward way for these domain experts and laboratories to the market.
Okay, so you had your own business. Then you got involved in that project in Switzerland.
Yes.
Was that part of your study, or was that a job for you? And how were you selected for that?
It was part of the study and part of I applied. I applied for this program. It was part of the study and part of the job. Yeah, I was paid.
Sounds
yes.
Really exciting. Very big project, scientific like said. Job. And then NUS, what type of role was that there?
What type of?
At the National University of Singapore, what were you doing there? I mean, what was the title? Were you a lecturer?
Yes, I was a lecturer. I was associate professor there, and I was in charge. Of course, I had some PhD students, but my job was to find laboratories that have really good research, really good knowledge in some domain, and try to build artificial intelligence models around their domain with their knowledge, with their expertise, and understand how to bring it fast to the market, how to spin off a company, how to set up the company in NUS, and how to bring this company to the market, how to pitch it to investors, and how to find CEOs, because this is quite important. Scientists cannot be good C-level anything except for a chief scientific officer. So I have to find chief executive officer, COO, to actually peg the company the way that investors feel confident that it can be real business, not just a scientific, one more scientific research that is done outside of the university.
So your career is really a lot about commercialization of science.
Yeah.
Right.
And I was thinking
and of course
about
the role,
this. Go ahead, Dimitri.
And of course, my position in United Nations helped me a lot, because I was lucky 4 years ago to become part of big UN family. And United Nations now start to promote AI, start to do a lot of legislations, help on AI, and start applying AI in different areas. I became part of UNODC, United Nations Office of Drug and Crime, where we try to apply new technologies to fight different type of crimes all over the world, and try to use big data to do it. And it's quite exciting, because it involves, again, various domains of knowledge. I mean, I'm traveling to different countries, trying to be very practical, and that work in UN is very helpful.
Are you still teaching, Dimitri? Because actually the work that you are doing, not really the role, but the kind of work that you're doing, first of all, it really requires kind of unusual set of skills. You know, the skills that a professor comes in with is actually very different from the focus or the kind of personality that a commercialization person needs. So it's unique that you've kind of managed to combine it within just the one person. But my question is, like, are you still actively involved in like academic research, or is your focus on the commercialization work? Because both these areas, they demand a lot of time.
Right, but you know, in this case, I'm very focused. Basically, working in commercial area is, for me, is just focusing on the problem statement in some domains, say again agriculture or medical area, pharmaceutical area. So you have to find the problem that has to be solved, and this problem has to have some impact on the industry, on the domain or on the area. So it's number one. Number two, you have to collect data, as I just mentioned, and you have to find domain expert, somebody who can help you to label the data, or somebody who can help you to understand the data. So this is more about scientific part. And then you have to have the team who can do the whole thing. And it's about managing this innovation development. But I'm not charged for business. If I chose the problem statement right, if I have a good team, if the model that AI model that is designed can solve it, then you basically don't need to be involved in the business part. You just have to find a very good CEO who can be co-founder and who will be in charge for bringing it to the market. That's why I love to give lectures on MBAs. An MBA, you can find a lot of very decent businessmen who are ready to join a good project. And of course, I have PhD students in my universities. I do it, for example, here in Emirates, in the United Arab Emirates, in Khalifa University. That is a splendid university with a lot of equipment, a lot of very bright guys, a lot of very good PhD students. And yes, I still give lectures, especially in Central Asia, in Bishkek International University of Kyrgyzstan. Well, that is important for me because I'm originally coming from Central Asia, so I try to support this part of the world as well.
I have a question. If you look back, what do you think has been the most important career decision that you have made?
Moving to Singapore was, maybe, you know, as I mentioned, this having this cultural aspect of living in the melting pot of nations was important when I was growing up. And then I moved to the UK for my master degree, and then I moved to Singapore. So I think this decision of not to stay in one place and move and meet new people and have new challenges was very important. If you just stay and don't move and you don't change your comfort zone, you are not progressing. And that influenced me a lot because I had different views, access to different pool of talents and different challenges, and that influenced my career a lot.
Did it influence in terms of opportunities, or did it open up your mind, or what was the impact?
Opportunities for sure. Soft skills that I mentioned are so important if you are an AI expert. Understanding different markets, that's also very important. Now when I have a problem statement here in the Emirates, I have a privilege to go to the UK, to Singapore, to China, to Central Asia, and understand what is their problem in this domain. Is it the same? What is the market? So you have this opportunity to know everything quite fast, and that helps a lot because all innovations have to be global, obviously, and this because you have to have a good market. If you do something in tiny Singapore, you'll not have a market. So I had to travel a lot in Vietnam, Thailand, Indonesia, Malaysia, because you have around 60 million people living in APAC and region. And that is a huge market, but still, while it's Southeast Asia, the countries are so different. But still, it's a big market. So you have to find these innovations that can cross these cultural borders, if I can say like this.
So much also about networks for you. You know, that Absolutely. Diversity, you have the experience in the different countries, but I expect then, yeah, you can pick up the phone or email somebody, you know, if you're solving a problem, I think someone else might have also dealt with this a bit, so let me go and check with them.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Is there something, you know, through the career journey that you've had so far, an achievement that you're really proud of? I mean, something that you would want to share through the platform?
Some of the achievements. Yes, you know, I think the recent one that happened during COVID, and everybody was sitting at home, including professors. We had nothing to do. And I invented a tool, basically an application that you can install on your phone. You can cough on your phone, and it shows if you have COVID cough or non-COVID cough. And the accuracy was very high in non-medical, in non-hospital environment, very high, more than 90%. And at that time, I remember that Vietnam had a huge problem with PCR tests. And the minister, and I still have this letter, I'm very proud of it, the minister signed that this tool can be used in Vietnam for this COVID area, just to save people's lives, because everybody was panicking and nobody wanted people with a real COVID cough to leave the house. And that was used for several months. And I know by modeling, it saved a lot of lives. And that was very important for me. And maybe the second thing that I'm very proud of, I got the national award for this, because I'm Kyrgyz citizen, and my first mission with the United Nations was in Kyrgyzstan. And in Kyrgyzstan, we have huge problems with illegal, illicit drugs that are growing in the country. And the police, it's very hard to fight with this problem, and it's very dangerous. So we train the AI model that can detect illegal, illicit drugs plantations from satellite and send it to police. And it helped to decrease the number of problems in this area, the number of plantations by 10 times. And actually stopped growing illicit plants in a small country that impacted a lot of lives, as I understand for now. And I was awarded with a government award for this, and that was also important. So sometimes you do things in artificial intelligence that you know influence a lot of lives, and that's very important for me.
Or the work that you've done, it is so amazing, because some of these locations, they are so remote.
Yeah.
After the conference, I realized that there's a huge part of Central Asia which may be even inaccessible. So it's very hard to monitor from the police's side where these plantations are. So it's amazing how tech is being used to tackle some of these issues. It's so heartening to hear the work that you've been doing. Felicity, you were saying something. Sorry, I keep cutting you off.
No, you're all good. No, I just said it was amazing. That's all I wanted to say. Just how you've been able to use the science, your interest in this, business interest as well, the experience with diversity, people, the places that you've worked in, and doing so much for the benefit of humanity. It's really impressive. I guess my question is, what's next for you?
You know, I'm now very much impressed with what is going on in the Middle East, especially what Saudi Arabia is doing, how Emirates are securing best talents, how Qatar is moving on. And I see so many scientists coming here. I see so big appetite for innovations in this region, and neutrality, very good geopolitical strategy here is really helping. And I'm very happy in Dubai, because it's a place where you meet people from all over the world. And I'm impressed how local governments are investing in science, and how adaptive they are, how fast they change the laws to adopt all the AI innovations. So for the next 5-6 years, I see this part of the world grows really, really great. And I see how Emirates and Saudis are supporting other areas around Central Asia, Africa, and Middle East countries. It's amazing. And I would love to stay here and be part of this great transformation that that this country started.
And staying in the AI space or something different?
It's mostly AI space, of course, is a focus. But also I like that local universities, say King Abdullah Universities of Science and Technologies, I think it's one of the richest in the world now. Khalifa University, where I have the privilege to work, is also a huge one. You have access to great physical equipment in physics and chemistry and biology. That's also very important for AI at the end of the day. They have good computational clusters, and you have a lot of freedom here for research. And that's really, really great atmosphere.
So, Dimitri, I may have shared earlier that our audience is career practitioners, but we also have, you know, job seekers and young people who listen to the podcast. Are there any words of wisdom that you can leave us with, any motto that you live by that you would want to share?
I would just, you know, if you, it's not just my words. If you listen to the recent interviews of Sam Altman of ChatGPT OpenAI CEO, he also focuses how important it is to have knowledge in various domains. Of course, you have to be expert in some area, you have to really be focused, and you have to really do something very good in one domain, but you also have to have this diversity and the privilege of getting access to different knowledge domains, and at least understand, at least listen to podcasts or read books in various domains. That the modern world becomes so complicated and everything is so interconnected that you cannot be a specialist only in one area. And of course, this would be my advice as well.
So you think the world is going to be interdisciplinary in the future, and that's where the future is at?
Absolutely, yes.
Great. Dimitri, thank you so much for your sharing. I'm sure that your unique background and the unique stories that you've shared, they will be quite an inspiration to our listeners. So really, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.